it took me a long time to begin sensing myself in the Navisha. And the first time that I felt that was in my canonical year when we put on a program and I sang I Love Mountain Music in my habit. And now I could never sing that because it just wouldn't have the effect it had then with the skirts. I could sway and the veil and the skirts would go because the part of it talks about Hawaii, and so I just gave a little bit of a whatever. And that's the first time that I did anything in front of anybody in the convent. And I know that was the first time that I started being myself. And I don't know, there were other things in the bishop, but that's the most important thing I remember. And then, in the novitiate, I got so homesick, just 100 miles from home, and people would say, "Oh, where are you from, honey?" And I, Nikon. I could barely get it out. And I remember even, it was the same year, my canonical year, we were in the canonical classroom and Karen Seehausen was there. And Marge Berry was one of the mistresses then. And I, for some reason, I guess because somebody said, "Where are you from?" I started crying and I was just going to stop. And Marge came in and she said, "Come over to my room." So I remember going to the hall, trying to get control of myself because, you know, me going to talk to somebody like that. And, you know, she really consoled me. And Joan Crum, we had to, I think it was the same year, write some kind of a prayer. And I compared my crying to a stream that would start getting kind of logged, backed up because of little twigs and things just forming a kind of dam, and then all of a sudden it would burst open, and my tears felt like that. I guess I was trying to hold things and then it would just come out, and I called myself Sweaty Eyes. I said, because Joan says, and she recently told my brother who met her just a couple weeks ago, that one time she asked me if I was crying, and I said, "No, my eyes were just sweating." So Sweaty Eyes was from the novitiate. Then where I started to come out more was at Holy Rosary. Even though I hated them, every Wednesday we had a sensitivity group.
This was, you were a junior?
Yes, I was a junior. And I wanted to join the choral group at Carlo College, and it was the same night as the sensitivity group. And Marge was there again because she was our junior mistress. And I said that I would like to do that. And she said, "We have, of course you realize you'll be the only one in the house not participating in this." Peer pressure. I bent. But in this group, even though I was never one that really got hit hard, because some people did, I never ended up hurt in those groups. I was confronted enough and asked enough questions and spoke in front of the group, which was extremely hard for me, that it really brought me out. And this one time, somebody said, "What if you could do anything in the world, what would you do right now?" And I said, "I would go beachcombing." And that night, Marge put money on my bed and said that I could go beachcombing the next day. And that was probably the first time that I went into anything that was completely unknown, because I never rode the buses in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And I went over on McKnight Road to see Gone with the Wind. Had my first encounter with a man. He was an older man, and he got off the bus when I was waiting for a bus, and he got off one of the buses that arrived there. And I smiled at him, and the next
thing
I knew...
By this time, you are not wearing a habit, right?
We were in a black... We were in subdued dress.
Were you? Mm-hmm. Not the habit.
Not the habit. Mm-hmm. But before I knew it, he was holding my hand and my arm. His name was John Steigerwald. John Charles Steigerwald. And this also marks my life, I think. He gave me a Kennedy half dollar, and he told me to remember him by it. Well, I remembered him, but I spent that the same day, I think. because I needed it. But, yeah, he talked to me. I guess he was just a lonely old man, and I gave him a little hint of a smile, and that smile has gotten me into more trouble. But I really feel that I needed push to come out of myself. Mm-hmm. And in those years also, for Jubilee, I began singing. I sang MacArthur Park, and people didn't know what it was supposed to be saying, and they laughed. But I kept on singing, and that was when I was still Holy Resurrected, I believe. In the next year at St. Raphael's, I sang My Way, and I really felt I had a hard year. Really felt I wanted to sing a song just out of defiance. My way. And I went into something that, I went into teaching chemistry. I taught 1 year of grade school, but didn't find that, I couldn't handle the group work. I didn't seem to be organized to keep four groups going at one time, and so it was very frustrating for me. And so I went to Quigley to teach. And I found that I liked teaching.
When and how did you start singing with the
Mendelssohn
Choir?
I started singing there. It was, I believe, in 1974. Two of the girls that had gone to Quigley took me to Heinz Hall. In fact, one of them made a dress for me to wear, a long dress, and we went to see Handel's Messiah. Mm-hmm. And I was so impressed by that, and I guess I did some digging into the Mendelssohn Choir, that ordinary people could belong to that. And so it was advertised that they were having auditions. So I went to the audition, and because at that point I thought the louder you sang, the better it was. I sang the Holy City and belted it out, and a few days later got a little note that I had not auditioned well and my voice was too loud. It would not blend in with the other voices. And it was in that year, I was still going or beginning my work at Indiana. I believe that was the second summer. So when I went to Indiana, I looked into the music department, and there was a retired teacher. He was doing some last work at the university. I went for 11 hours of voice with him, and he helped me to learn how to breathe better, how to sight read a bit, how to sing with a more soft tone. So I went back and auditioned that fall, right after, I believe it was in September, for the Mendelssohn Choir, and I sang this song that you could barely hear. And I got a telephone call, and I remember just being so thrilled. And the first work that we did was Mahler's Resurrection, and it was just so exciting. We sat for, I think it was nearly 2 hours, while the orchestra and the soloists sang, and then all of a sudden, the whole Mendelssohn Choir just stood up, and we stood on the riser in front of us so that we gave an appearance of really rising up, and it was so glorious. And I taped it off the radio. And I stayed with the Mendelssohn Choir for a year and a half until it got to, we had to re-audition. And at that point, I already knew that I was going to Borba, and I was beginning to, I thought, why go through all this re-auditioning nervousness, thinking I won't make it, when I really have my sights on other things now? And so I didn't go back for the re-auditioning. But I found I was the only sister. There had been another sister earlier than me who was in it, but at the time I was in it, I was the only sister.
Is that Sister Marion?
No, it was a Sister Mercy, I believe, because Marion sang with the opera.
Oh,
yes. Yeah. But it was very good. And probably since that time, my voice has gone down just because of the lack of training, and the lack of discipline. Canary shouldn't go to the Amazon.
Yeah. Is that what you said? Throwing the gifts of God into the jungle. How did you come to feel that you wanted to do missionary work? You had this great talent, and it was great no matter how humble you want to be. And yet you just seem to be so anxious to do the missionary work and go to Borba.
It started before I entered, really. Even though this proves that I didn't know much about the community, because I wanted to be a missionary. And at that point we had no missions. And I entered and got so homesick that I believe the desire to be a missionary just got so overwhelmed that it was suppressed. And in the October of 1975, I was teaching chemistry, and I just started feeling a change in myself. And any time I do feel those changes, I always talk to as many people as I can to try and get to the root of it. And I talked to people because I was 28, and I thought, well, in a year and a half, I'll be 30. Maybe it's because I'm going to be 30. And I didn't know what it was. And that kept on. And it was in that year, that December, that Marge and Urs went down to visit Borba. But even that visit didn't consciously touch me, because I don't remember responding to a call from the community as far as needing sisters down there. I feel that it came from my past. And just when I began thinking about Borba, it was like I couldn't think of anything else. And Marge told me that I should have holy indifference. And
You had a little garage sale up there, remember?
I gave everything away practically.
Just put all little bits of junk out on the table. And then
free flea market.
Flea market, you called it, We'd go over there.
I just put everything out. People could take what they wanted. But I just was so abandoned to this idea. Sometimes when I'm in Borba now, I say, oh my goodness. But it was just the deep-rooted feeling I had in me that I don't know how I would have dealt with that if I wouldn't have been able to go. And so I was getting anxious. I had to tell Father Hale if I would or would not be going back. Marge was saying, have holy indifference. On March 19th, St. Joseph's Day, I thought for sure this would be a very significant day to tell me, and she didn't do anything. Then on March 25th, which was the Annunciation, she announced to me that I would be going to Borba.
What year was that?
That was 1976. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go, and yet there was the human side from the very first moment that she told me, I dreaded the leaving. I did. Because I dreaded leaving my mom and dad. But I got ready for it, and everything went smoothly. Janice Vandermeck and I got ready together. We weren't delayed with waiting for our visas. It came along nicely, got all our work done. Went to New York together and to get our physicals. And I remember going home to tell my parents. Father Hale would let me use the Quigley car every once in a while to go home. I remember driving up and hardly being able to see the road at times because I was crying so much. And I got home and I walked in the door, and right away I said, I have to go to the bathroom. I had to get control of myself. And I came down, and Daddy always, he always lays on the couch. So I said, Daddy, can you come out here? And Mom was sitting in the rocking chair, and Daddy was sitting alongside, and I stood in front of him, and I said, I have to tell you what's going to happen, what I've decided to do. And my mother says, I think I know. You're either going to New York to be a singer, or you're going to Brazil. And I just started crying, because it just, you know, she knew me so well that she knew that those two things were deepest in me. And my dad says, I don't know why you have to go. You just want to travel. Because he was, he's always wanted to hold on to us, and I think it's been hard. One daughter in California, a son traveling all over and then settling in Memphis. Especially since he's lived in the same house all his life.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He's just wanted his family to stay close. And I said to him, I have to travel because that's how I'll get there. And it was hard at first, like getting ready was very difficult. And the leaving, my dad didn't go to the airport, and my mom did, and I believe it was Kathy Bush took that slide that just shows me with a pain-racked face, just extremely sad, because I was hugging my mom goodbye. And it took me so long to get into Borba, because the first 2 years were all, it just seemed, they were all personal problems. Not personal, they were vocational problems. They were celibacy problems. They were adjustment problems and dealing with the language and going to Rio and feeling feelings I had never felt before, and just not knowing what to do with them. And then going back to Borba and being in the middle of nowhere, and letters getting lost, and then what was very hard was Janice left. We were there about a year and 4 months when she left.
She returned to the States.
She returned to the States. And that was, I didn't realize it at the time, but I know now from what happened afterwards, from how vulnerable and gullible and just weak I was, and what I fell into, how really that affected me. Because I don't believe we shared about that much at the time. It was like it happened, and then we tried to throw ourselves back into the work, and I wasn't into the work to begin with. So I was just floundering around, and it was just extremely hard. And when I came home the first time, I brought all that with me, plus some experiences, which just made me grow up very much. And I know that I've passed, you know, I've gone to heights in my understanding of my own celibacy because of these experiences. But at the time, they just, I wasn't sure of my vocation. I wasn't sure about Borba. Borba, I was so anxious to go, and yet to go through all that, the language wasn't as, it was difficult, and at first it was a comparison between Janice and me. People would say to me, how come you don't speak as well as Sister Janice? And I would say, well, Sister Janice taught Spanish, so she's able to get the language in an easier way. But I forced myself, but I could speak the language earlier than I really began speaking it. Giving myself in English. But I had to feel comfortable with myself. Mm-hmm. And then it's very hard to speak it was very hard for me to speak a foreign language with my sisters, because it's so just, you just feel everyone is listening to every word, and the people are very accepting, even though they're very honest, like in saying, asking me why I didn't speak as well. But I grew to a point, and at the culmination of all these experiences and that, I came home for my first visit. And I just came home feeling abnormal, that I wasn't dealing with things right, that I was different than everybody else. I came home feeling, I wasn't sure that I was going back to Borba, because I wasn't sure that if I went back that these things wouldn't repeat themselves. And I know people sense that. And one of the hardest experiences for me was Harvest Festival, where I was meeting sisters who I hadn't seen before in the visit, and other people who knew how I wanted to go to Borba, with what enthusiasm I went. And they would say, how do you like Borba? And I knew they wanted me to say, oh, I just love it. And I couldn't. And every time that question came to me, I just was like in a knot inside it, the contradiction, trying to weed things out personally and trying to sense a commitment to there and the responsibility to go back. All of this, I went and got Marguerite, and I said, I just have to go and talk. And so I cried and talked, and of course that eased things. And I know that I went back to conquer the fears I had, because I had fears around repeating things. Also, the profiles had come out on Borba, and it was very honest. But I think we hurt the bishop, because it said there was no leadership in the Prelazia. And so I had a great fear of going back and facing him, even though he wrote me a letter and a PS mentioned profiles, and just that he thought it was very off base. And that we've never dealt with that. And so I went back to Borba. And at first, when I was in Borba, I was again very insecure. I even said to Barbara, I said, Barbara, because we were going to spend 4.5 months together while Terry was at language school and Patty was up here. I said, Barbara, you're going to have to tell me what to do. I just felt so insecure. And the thing that changed that was that Barbara went with Terry to take Terry to language school. And I was in Borba for 3 weeks by myself. And I had to meet any crises that arose. I had to take care of the parish things, talk Portuguese, go out, meet people, and that was really, I felt it was the turning point in my feeling good about being in Borba. And that was over 2 years after being there, or having been there, or after going the first time, over 2 years. And now there are more talents, I think, that I have to let evolve and be just more drawn from me down there. There's still more of a sense of relaxing and really feeling the commitment. I had a sense of the commitment I have, though, about a month ago. I went to Columbus, Ohio, and gave a mission appeal, and I spoke at 4 masses. And the first time I came back, I could not speak at all on Borba, other than in a little group telling stories or that. But I felt when I spoke to these people that I was really speaking from my heart. And it wasn't just talking about Borba, it was talking about Jesus Christ ministering to the people along the rivers there. And that I feel that he is
true missionary.
I just felt, I knew that I couldn't have done that without having that sense in myself. And it was a very good experience for me to do that. And the people were so receptive. And at the 11:30 Mass, Judy and Carlene and Sue and Betty, the two novices at Gehenna, were there. And that, they said, do you want us to come? And or do you not want us to come? And I said, I think I want you to come. I didn't know how I was going to be, if I'd be more nervous. But I feel I spoke the best. Because I think I spoke to them, and as well as to everybody else. And the people clapped for me after that talk. It was so just rewarding for me.
Which parish was that, Gehenna?
Well, it was at a parish in Columbus, St. Agnes, because the Propagation of the Faith director had written to our community asking for someone to speak at two parishes, and the other parish did not want me, probably because I'm a woman. And so I went to this smaller parish, and this was very well received. It was so good. So now, in about 5 weeks, I go back again. And this time, being home has been much more settling for me, because I didn't bring all the personal problems that I did the last time. What I dealt with more this time are my aging parents. And I talked to a lot of people about them also. And so now when I go back, the believing is the hardest part. Once I'm back there, it's not that I don't think of home, because I write a lot of letters, but believing is just extremely hard. It's just like that, taking a piece of creation, tearing it apart.
Are you really anticipating the work again?
I am more so this time than the last time, much more this time. And I know the people better, and so I envision rejoining them.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the conditions under which you work, my sister? What type of work do you do?
Probably in terms of ministry here in the States, our ministry there is more of a parish ministry. But I feel that because we're not there to baptize, we're not there to convert the Brazilian people, we're there to bring them to a fulfillment of their baptism, of their personhood. And in our work, I think we all agree on this, the most important thing we do down there is be. We are there. We're present there, witnessing. But we're also present there in being with them. Some people have told us that they feel closer to us than they have felt to other Brazilian sisters working in our area. And I think that does us a great honor, because we really do. We're available. And now we have our work down in more, it's down on paper better, let's say, in 9 categories. But we try to encourage. So many times we feel, the lack of responsibility on their part, but we put ourselves so much into this, ride around on our bikes, telling all these people about a meeting, and few people come. And it's very discouraging at times, but there are things that we do see happening, like one man who is one of the leaders in one of the villages in which we work. He is the president, or is going to take over, because there was some confusion. The union of the rural workers. And I think that because of our influence in his life and all the courses that he's attended with us, and the leadership qualities that we've built up in him, that he's able to do that. And even he and another fellow went into Manaus to a meeting, and he was interviewed on television and gave very, I didn't see the interview, but he gave very, it wasn't just yes, no, maybe. He gave a very explicit answer. And we work with the local church, and I see more being written in the States about these small Christian communities. That's probably the basis of our work down there, that we make or try to make people see that they need one another, that they should be like hospitable to each other, to work together, to bring themselves to the more. And probably that more is where our charism comes in, as far as neighbor with neighbor and God with neighbor and God with us, all of that. Explicit things, I could go into all the explicit things we do, but
I think most of us have the idea, missionary work is going on, baptizing children, you know. Mm-hmm. Or feeding the hungry, or what? Go ahead.
Well, some of the explicit things we do a lot of visiting, home visiting, hospital visiting. We do group work, parish council work, youth group, groups of children. We work with groups of teachers of the sacraments, mainly First Communion and baptism. We work with the teachers, the school teachers, because in the schools, instead of our teaching the religion, which would take up all of our time, we work with the teachers so that they teach their own religion. And that's twofold. They feel more of a responsibility in their Christianity, and then they're also sharing that. We do a lot of river work now, more so than we have before, and this means that we go out on what's called a desobriga, and we travel from village to village. In each village, we try to meet with the people, pick out someone who seems to have a little bit more than the others, so that that person could be trained to be responsible and help his people to move into more responsibility. These river trips are important to us because we're in Borba, and the bulk of the population is in Borba, but there are so many people along all of these rivers out in what we would call the boonies, really out. And they just, they need to be encouraged, and especially if we don't keep encouraging our work in these villages, what we call our communities, then they very easily slide back into being what they were. Not that they were in a bad state, but they could be so much better off if they learn how to work together to improve not only their spiritual well-being, but their material well-being. On the river, they're kind of at the mercy of these boats. These boats that come by, and if they have produce, the boat owner or the captain can buy the produce, but he'll name the price, because if he doesn't take it, it will just rot. So part of the work is the union work, where they can strive to get a good price for things, or that they can even get a boat among themselves and take the produce into Manaus.